America and the gateway to the West. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, proof of God. Looking forward to that one. Here's what's happening. Tensions between North Korea and South Korea appear to be ratcheting up again, just as a senior Russian official now is warning of an apocalyptic scenario developing in the Korean Peninsula. The Russian deputy foreign minister said that the world could not ignore the crisis surrounding North Korea and fears over the country's suspected nuke missile development program, but that he hoped a peaceful resolution could be found. Also, the deputy head of Iran's Revolutionary Guards warning Europe that if it threatens Tehran, the guards will increase the range of missiles to above 2,000 kilometers, able to hit European countries. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com with us. Well, the tensions still keep, or is it just rhetoric, John?
Well, I mean, Sergey Lavrov, who's the foreign minister of Russia, is the biggest smoke blower that he's worse than Baghdad Bob. I mean, in terms of the smoke that he blows. I mean, he's the one that said basically, well, the U.S. can't have any military option in North Korea because North Korea is a nuclear-armed state, and deterrence and mutually assured destruction would, preempt the U.S. from any kind of an attack. Now, he knows that they don't have a ICBM currently with a nuclear-tipped missile at their disposal to be able to hit the United States. So Lavrov likes to play at both sides. Now he's talking about an apocalypse over there when he knows that his country will do nothing to defend North Korea if the U.S. attacks them, and neither will China. So I think that situation. But, you know, pivoting over to the Mideast right now, I mean, I think what you've got right now is Iran really, you know, calling the shots, I mean, creating proxy war after proxy war, the one in Yemen, really a war against Saudi Arabia. I mean, you've got the young 32-year-old Mohammed bin Salman that's basically incarcerated most of his family and is the heir apparent to the throne for the 81-year-old his father, bin Salman. But the issue that is going on with Iran right now is, you know, they've got their hands in everything.
That's huge. That's a huge problem, John.
It's a major problem because the U.S. The interesting thing is that bin Salman yesterday announced that he has a 40-nation coalition that is out to defeat terrorism. 40 Muslim countries that are committed to defeating terrorism, and what they said in their message was, we are not attacking any religion or any group. We are attacking terrorists. And what that is hinting at, George, is a very close alliance that has taken place between Israel and the Gulf states right now, especially Saudi Arabia. They are sharing intel and they are sharing security measures.
Meanwhile, over the weekend, John, in Egypt, 300-plus people butchered in a mosque. Unbelievable story.
And that massacre is most likely ISIS, probably not the Muslim Brotherhood that is at war with El-Sisi, you know, the president of Egypt. But what it shows is that these pockets and these ungovernable lands that exist, like in the Sinai Peninsula, the Egyptian military is absolutely defenseless. And as you remember, those lands were given back in 1979.
That's right.
Per an agreement called the Camp David Accords. And Israel had built up the Sinai since 1967 through 1979 to be one of the premier resort areas in the entire world. And now it's infiltrated back with terrorists, and El-Sisi is collaborating with Israel right now to do what they can to contain these Islamists over there.
Oh, what a world. Track John's work at onlinecolumnist.com. A man who survived the Las Vegas massacre in October, where 58 people were gunned down and 400 people injured, died several weeks later in a hit-and-run in southern Nevada. Roy McClellan, 52 years old, was killed when he was hit by a car in Pahrump, about 60 miles west of Las Vegas. When your time is up, it's up. Researchers from Iowa State University have found that angry men aged 20 to 40 were 1.5 times more likely to be dead 35 years later than those who were calmer. Scientists believe this is due to a number of factors linking stress to physical damage, This frequently releases adrenaline during periods of stress, they say. Bitcoin's descent has not happened yet. It has continued to go up and up and up, and it showed no signs of abating, with the cryptocurrency soaring to another record high, just a few percent away from $10,000 after gaining more than a fifth in value over the past 3 days alone. It's amazing. And online sales soaring to record highs this Thanksgiving as more Americans use their smartphones and tablets to shop from home without going anywhere. More than half of the online purchases, half, were placed on mobile devices, according to data from Adobe Analytics, which measures online transactions by the 100 largest U.S. web retailers. Let's check in with the expert on the Internet, Lauren Weinstein. Just amazing, Lauren. People are just staying at home, ordering stuff, not even going shopping.
Yeah, though it's a kind of complicated picture this year. I think there may be some maturity starting to creep into the market. Yeah, it was a really big Cyber Monday, the biggest ever. But stone and mortar stores were doing pretty good too. And a lot of people were saying they preferred that because they could do price matching more easily and see and touch the merchandise. So while it's easy to kind of get into that stream of thought that says, wow, 5 years from now or 10 years from now, all the stores will be closed and everybody will be ordering everything online. At the moment, if you look at the entire year, not just this truncated holiday period where there's very intense online sales activity in particular, about 90% of retail sales are still made in traditional regular stores, physical offline stores.
Well,
so there's a lot of room for growth.
They better happen this retail season, that's for sure.
Well, it means that there's room for growth in online, but it means that smart stores have a place too.
Indeed. Lauren, thank you so much. Talk to you soon. Lauren Weinstein, expert on the Internet. 40,000 people have been evacuated. It could affect up to 100,000 people in Indonesia as they expand the established danger zone around the erupting volcano that is soaring ash 9,000 feet into the sky, into the atmosphere, and those explosions could be heard 7 miles away from the Bali volcano. What else is going on in the skies? Let's check in with Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, George, and happy holidays and
you
Merry
too.
Christmas to everybody. And just want to remind everybody that light pollution is a major subject, George, especially for the large telescopes. But closer to home, we're finding out that when we switched from sodium vapor lamps to LEDs, a survey was done, said in 2012 to 2016, artificial lighting, outdoor lighting, has increased 9.2% globally as far as light pollution. And astronomers, of course, without a doubt, need the super dark skies. And they're saying that LEDs, especially blue ones, can scatter more light into the sky. So big problems ahead for the preservation of the night sky. But folks, there's something that you'll be able to see, George. This is amazing. The supermoon, the only one of 2017, will occur this Sunday night coming into Monday morning. Don't miss it. Some 222,443 miles away, rising in the northeast sky in the northern hemisphere. This actual supermoon is defined as this. It's a new or full moon that comes within 90% of the closest approach that a moon does to the Earth. So this one is the only one of 2017. Don't miss it. In the live sky, as we wrap up, Saturn and Mercury, George, begin a most amazing series of triple conjunctions. How you can see this? Tuesday evening, sky watchers, if you have clear skies, look into the southwest. Both Saturn and Mercury will be the brighter of the two objects, are only 3 degrees apart. The second of the triple conjunctions happens in December on the 6th. Solar glare interferes. But January 13th of the new year, 2018, Saturn and Mercury will be seen in the morning sky by only 7/10 of a degree apart. And finally, George, this is amazing. Those of us that believe in astrology or astronomy, we find out that on November 30th, according to astronomy, the sun enters that magical 13th sign of the zodiac, a strange constellation called Ophiuchus, the serpent bearer. So could you imagine if you described yourself as being an Ophiuchian? That's a strange one. Dr. Sky reminds everybody always to remember to keep your eyes to the skies. Email me at drsky@cox.net. And George, always great to be talking with our listeners out there. And thank
I love
you for
it,
having
Stephen.
Me.
We'll talk to you next week. Dr. Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky, indeed. Okay, we all have ups and downs in life, don't we? The secret is to rebound and be able to get through all that. In a moment, Tim Ferriss back with us on Coast to Coast as we talk about his latest work called Tribe of Mentors, Short Life Advice from the Best in the World. We're going to talk about your life next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back to Coast to Coast. One holiday gone, but a couple more coming. Tim Ferriss back with us. Tim has been listed as one of the Fast Company's most innovative business people, one of Forbes' names you need to know, and one of Fortune's 40 under 40. He is an early age technology investor, advisor in the following: Uber, Facebook, Shopify, Alibaba, and about 50 others, and the author of 3 number one New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestsellers, and we're talking about his latest work, Tribe of the Mentors. Tim, welcome back to the program. Hope your holiday was good.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great holiday.
Great.
Hope the same to you.
Indeed. Everything seems to be rolling along. It's a fast year, isn't it?
It is a fast year, and it's a very volatile year, not necessarily in a negative sense, but there's a lot of flux, and with that brings, I think, some degree of fear and also a lot of opportunities. It's an exciting time.
A lot of people, though, Tim, are frustrated. I sense it. I see it wherever I go. There seems to be, I can't say they're unhappy, but they're tense. Are you feeling that?
Oh, definitely. You see it certainly in Silicon Valley at a very, very high level. I think that things appear very polarized, and people seem to be reverting to tribal behavior. And you see that in certainly all the major cities I've visited, it's extremely pronounced. New York City, same story. I'm in Washington, D.C. right now, same story. So people are tense. I mean, I think that they're looking for tools and ways to relieve that tension, because it's very difficult to live with low-grade anxiety constantly. As you were mentioning earlier, the release of cortisol and adrenaline and so on. It's fight or flight in acute instances, very good evolutionary response, mm-hmm. but having it all day long, probably not in the best of our interests.
This new book, Tribe of Mentors, is huge. Tell me about the title.
So Tribe of Mentors really came about because I had a very difficult and intense 2017, I think, like a lot of people. And a lot of changes in my life. A number of close friends passed away unexpectedly in a short period of time. And that led me to want to reassess my life and direction and priorities, how I was spending my time. And I one day was journaling on a number of these questions, trying to come up with answers, having a really tough time, getting frustrated and anxious. And I realized that with the podcasts that I've had over the last few years, which is the Tim Ferriss Show, about 200 million or 250 million downloads now, I have access to a lot of the world's best experts in, for instance, everything ranging from cryptocurrency, which we could certainly talk about.
Oh, Bitcoin's going crazy.
Oh, yeah, we could talk a lot about that. So, for instance, I mean, the founders of Ethereum and Zcash and all these currencies are in Tribe of Mentors. And I thought, why not take these questions that I have and send them to people who are the best of the best, ranging from people in their 20s, like these coders and crypto people, all the way up to people in their 60s and 70s and 80s. And that's what I did. So I compiled, with the same 11 questions, all of their answers into this book. So it's kind of a choose-your-own-adventure guide full of playbooks of people who are the best at what they do.
You recently wrote the book that you were on with me about a year ago called Tools of Titans. Now, how does this one differ from that?
Yeah, this is a great question. They're similar in appearance because they're both full of very short profiles. The biggest differences are that Tools of Titans was almost entirely guests that I have had on my podcast, whereas, and they were all asked different questions. In Tribe of Mentors, almost everyone in the book has not been on the podcast. It's an entirely new cast of characters. The fields are much more diverse. So you have, say, everyone from entertainers like Ben Stiller all the way to directors like David Lynch, athletes like Kelly Slater, the most decorated surfer of all time, to, say, the founder of the largest hedge fund in the world, Ray Dalio, Bridgewater Associates. So this the spectrum is really, really wide.
And I'm asking them the same questions. So, for instance, if you want to know how these people say no more effectively and decline various things so that they feel like they have more time, or how they handle overwhelm or anxiety, you can spot patterns across all of them much, much more easily. So I think it's the easiest to read and easiest to use and act upon book that I've written so far.
In putting together your books, did you get to everybody you needed to get to?
No, I didn't. Even at this point, I still get plenty of rejection letters. I wanted to, there were so many people I wanted to reach out to, or did reach out to and just couldn't get a hold of. I mean, ranging from people in the special operations world. I've had a lot of exposure to that world, but nonetheless got was unable to reach a lot of them for some obvious reasons. And then you name it. I mean, Dalai Lama, Oprah, there are plenty of Howard Stern. There are plenty of people on the list who I either couldn't reach or declined because they didn't have time or whatever it might be. And some of the rejection letters were so good and so useful, or as soon as I read them, I thought to myself, wow, I'm going to use that line, that I included them in the book. So there are also templates that you can use for your own email and so on for saying no to things.
Did you find any common denominator, Tim, with some of the people who responded to you?
I did. I found quite a few patterns, and that ranges from, for instance, morning routines. A very high percentage, I would say 80 to 90%, have some type of mindfulness practice, and it doesn't necessarily take the form of what we envision as meditation, but it could be using an app like Headspace, which can be tested for free, or it could be doing breathing exercises along the lines of something that is called the Wim Hof method. But it's a very high percentage, 80 to 90% in the morning before they turn their phone off of airplane mode, have some type of 10 to 20 minute practice that helps to set their emotional state for the day. That was very, very common. Another commonality was journaling, using journals very often in the morning to answer or elaborate on a question that was posed the night before. This is something that Thomas Edison very famously did. He said, never go to bed without posing a question to your subconscious. So whether it's, say, the founder of LinkedIn, Reid Hoffman, who's a billionaire several times over with different businesses, which is kind of amazing, or Josh Waitzkin, who's a chess prodigy, or Richa Chadha, who's a very famous entertainer from India, they all have a journaling practice in the morning. So I've started to experiment with different variations of that. And then you have, for instance, patterns in the books they recommend. So one of the questions that I asked everyone was, what books have you gifted the most to other people?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, the phrasing, the most gifted, is actually much better than favorite for a lot of reasons we could go into, but gifted implies that the book has value for many other people, not just for them. So it's less less restricted to them personally. And Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, came up a lot. Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Rand, came up a lot across all genders, all industries. And then, for instance, a lesser-known book that came up a lot was Poor Charlie's Almanac, written by Charlie Munger, who's the investing partner, the lesser-known investing partner of Warren Buffett, who's just absolutely brilliant. And Poor Charlie's Almanac, inspired by Ben Franklin's almanac of similar name, has a collection of mental models for how you can make better decisions. And a lot of folks in the book have rules of thumb or guidelines that they use for making better, faster decisions, which is part of the reason that I interviewed a lot of poker phenoms like Daniel Negreanu and Fedor Holz and Liv Bowery, Annie Duke. I mean, these are some of the highest earning poker players of all time. And it turns out that the tools they use to observe or control their emotions at the table and make more rational bets can be applied to just about everything. So there are a lot of patterns, and that was part of the fun for me of putting the book together, was spotting those.
And they're very positive people, aren't they, generally?
They are very positive, and I think they cultivate it in a way that is very counterintuitive. One of the questions that I asked everyone was, Can you tell us a story about a failure that sowed the seeds for later success? You know, set the stage for later success. Do you have a favorite failure of yours?
And that's a good question. Tim, hold on. We're going to take a break. We'll come back for more. In the next hour, we'll take phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, here's a great tradition we're doing again for veteran hospitals all throughout the United States. We need your support. By popular demand, it's back. The charity CD, Holiday Magic Coast-Style CD, produced by our executive producers Tom Danheiser and T.D. Clark Entertainment, will be reissued, available for the holidays again this year. Enjoy traditional holiday songs and poems performed by your favorite Coast to Coast AM guests. Even I'm on there singing. 100% of the proceeds go to the veteran hospitals throughout the United States. You can go to coasttocoastam.com right now. You might even have to hit your refresh button. It was just posted up there. It's in the carousel. It's one of those little buttons down there, and you can order the CD that way. It's the Holiday Magic Coast Style CD as well if you're on Amazon.com. Holiday Magic Coast Style CD. And welcome back to Coast, Tim Ferriss with us, his latest work, Tribe of Mentors. Tim, you were talking about how to turn failure into success, and I'll let you go back to that story.
No, exactly. The observation that these people are optimistic, the 130-plus world-class performers that I interviewed, is right on the money, but how they get there is a little uncommon. And the way they get there is by viewing failure as feedback. And I always ask them for their favorite failure, some type of failure or perceived failure that set them up for later success. And so they're very good at reframing mishaps and disasters, problems, breakups, businesses failing, whatever it might be, as in many cases, life saving you from what you want by giving you what you need. And I think that that lens is really, really useful for keeping you moving when you might otherwise get depressed or stall out. And when you read these stories, you start to train yourself to think in that way. And I think that's a particularly useful tool in the toolkit for right now, when every possible headline seems to just be indicating that the world is spinning into chaos.
Falling apart.
Yeah, falling apart. I mean, it's really terrifying. And at the same time, there are also people who view times of massive change as incredible opportunities for finding new doors that are otherwise have otherwise remained closed, right? I mean, I think that when there's a lot of shaking up, there are also a lot of opportunities. So it's another lens that these people have developed that I think anybody can develop.
Let me ask you too, Tim, of the people that you interviewed, what was some of the most surprising answers that you got from some of them that just really just baffled you, shocked you?
Some of the most surprising, we can go in a million directions here, but I'll just go with what came to the top of my mind. And that is, I asked everyone, what is the purchase of $100 or less that has most positively impacted or changed your life in the last, say, 6 months? And I expected, in some cases, something really profound and deep. I found this book on philosophy or whatever it might be. And for many of them, it was, for instance, I'll give you one example. There's a very well-known novelist named Soman Chainani, and he found this product called Mother Dirt, which is actually a bacteria that you spray on your skin instead of using soap for acne, and it cured him of lifelong acne. So for him, that as a lifelong insecurity was fixed by this very, very, very simple product. Or another example would be this woman named Whitney Cummings, very famous stand-up comedian and also writer, director. And she has suffered from anxiety for various things. And she figured out that weighted blankets, getting these weighted blankets that you can buy very easily and putting them on top of her sheets, helped her to get to bed without anxiety. So it fixed her insomnia. And I'll give you another really odd one related to sleep, because I had onset insomnia for 25 years, where it just took me 2-3 hours to get to sleep. And Jane McGonigal, who is a PhD in game design, pointed out that Tetris, for instance, just the good old-fashioned game of Tetris, you can use the free version, has applications for PTSD. And if you use it before bed, play for like 10 minutes, it helps to overwrite, in other words, force out whatever loop would otherwise keep you up, and it makes it easier to get to sleep. So that's one that really surprised me.
When you were going through this, and you were picking up these traits from these people, of the 134, let's say, how many would you say were not successful, or were they all successful?
Well, you know, I would say that for each...
And what is success? What's the definition of that?
Yeah, well, so success is, I think, a really important word to put under a microscope. And certainly, what I would say is that each of these people are considered to be the best at what they do, whether it's coaching wrestling, surfing, inventing cryptocurrency, managing $160 billion, co-founding Facebook, whatever it might be. But for each person who's say, reading this book or any book and striving for success, I think it's very important that you either define it very clearly or don't use the word at all. So I think success is so widely used that it tends to lose any specific meaning. For some people in the book, and a lot of them define it for others to read. So for some people, it might be to say to love, to be loved, and to never stop learning, right? You might have that. For other people, it might be constantly expanding their sphere of comfort, right? So exposing themselves to discomfort and productive stress in a way that they're constantly expanding their sphere of comfortable action. And for others, it's getting stronger, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically stronger, like retired Navy SEAL commander Jocko Willink, who is a legend in the special forces community. So it differs from person to person, and I think it's important to recognize that the point of putting together a collection of short profiles is not that you try to be any one of these people. It's that you pick and choose the customized toolkit that you can experiment with yourself. And that's part of the fun, I think. And another pattern I'd point out is that a lot of these people view, say, new behaviors or New Year's resolutions, or whatever it might be, in terms of 2 to 4 week experiments. So they give themselves permission to try a lot of new things because the pressure is very low. They don't view them as a lifetime commitment if they're trying, say, a dietary change or something like that. It's a 2 to 4 week experiment, and then they keep track and they reassess, and then they can rejig as needed.
What would you like people to take away from the book Tribe of Mentors after they read it?
You know, the biggest thing I'd want them to take away from it, honestly, is nothing that we've talked about directly. I said I had a really intense and difficult year in 2017, and part of that was talking about some very dark times I experienced myself. So I had the 10th year anniversary this year of my first book, The 4-Hour Workweek. And the 10th anniversary day, to the day, I got on stage at TED, this incredible conference, for the first time to talk about how I almost committed suicide in college. Very few people knew about that. And it was a surreal juxtaposition. And a lot of my best friends in high school and college ended up committing suicide. It's terrifying.
What pushes everybody to that?
You know, I think it's different for different people. But one of the things I wanted to highlight in this book, in Tribe of Mentors, which I think is so important, is that no matter how dark things might seem, no matter how uniquely flawed you might think you are, almost all of these people have incredible insecurities. They have demons. They have battles they're fighting that they haven't spoken about. And for that reason, I always ask about the failures. I always ask about when they feel overwhelmed, when they feel unfocused, when they feel no good. And I'd like people to take away from reading all these profiles the conclusion that they are not alone. Really, that's it. Like, the upside tends to take care of itself if you control the downside. That's true in a lot of things in life. And I would just want people to realize that if they see people on magazine covers or whatever, it's easy to idolize them or think they have no flaws, that they don't suffer from the same ills that many of us do. And it's not true. They just have one or two strengths, and they've built habits around them. So no matter how you're feeling, I would just say you are not alone, and you can climb your way out and rebuild and make yourself better.
Would you consider yourself to be like Tony Robbins, motivational?
You know, Tony, I've gotten to know Tony over the last few years.
I'm surprised he's not in your book.
So he was in Tools of Titans. I'll actually be seeing Tony next week, believe it or not. I'll be spending some time with him next week. Tony's an incredible guy. I think he and I have slightly different approaches. What we share in common is, I think, a focus on tools and next steps. My approach tends to be getting out into the field and interviewing dozens or hundreds of people and then pulling their tactics out. I think Tony is very, very good at massive change with groups of 10,000 people at a time. I can't do what he does. That's just not my approach. I'm very introverted. But we are very clinical in teasing out the actionable next steps and testing assumptions. So I do think we have that in common for sure. One thing that makes Tony very different from a lot of other, say, people who would be put in the motivational speaker category is that Tony actually offers people the tools, whereas a lot of people just offer inspiration and then no tactics, no strategies. And I think that's actually dangerous.
Well, I got to tell you, you've done a great job putting this together, Tribe of Mentors. And it's not easy. It's not easy, Tim, to turn things around from people who have had so many things happen in their lives. But you've been able to see through that for yourself and for these others who have been part of the book.
I have. And people in the book talk about losing loved ones, losing parents. There are people in the book who are, for instance, congenital quad amputees. That means they were born without any arms and legs. Kyle Maynard is the example that comes to mind.
My gosh.
And the stories of what he's overcome, and also the fact that he climbed Mount Kilimanjaro without prosthetics, the first quad amputee to do so, when athletes have died.
That's
climbing Mount Kilimanjaro.
I couldn't even get 25 feet up that thing.
Yeah,
you know?
He military crawled the whole thing to deposit the ashes of a fallen, as I remember it, Navy SEAL at the summit. These are the types of stories that I think are so important right now when people are feeling afraid or overwhelmed, to give them the belief that they can find a North Star and also just the strength to persevere.
Can't success also be measured by a simple word, happiness?
I think yes, and I think there are different ways. There are different ways that we could, in turn, define happiness. I mean, I actually really like Jodie Foster's definition or quote of success, which is, she said, "In the end, success is sleeping well." And it sounds so simplistic, but I do think.
See, I would say success is waking up.
Well, yes. So both, right? I mean, it takes both. But I would say that you can really get a good read on where you are in your life right now by how easy it is to go to sleep, how well you sleep, and how you feel when you wake up.
What would you say about Steve Jobs? He's no longer with us. God rest his soul. You know, founder of Apple with Wozniak. Would you call him a success because he ended up dying of cancer? His life cut short.
Mm-hmm.
So all those riches that he accumulated didn't mean a thing when it all came down to it.
Yeah, you know, this is a great question. I've actually had the opportunity to spend a little bit of time with Wozniak, with Woz. And I never met Steve Jobs, but I know people who have. And based on everything I've heard, I would say he was absolutely effective as an agent of change. But I don't think he was a particularly happy guy, and he was certainly very caustic and abusive to certain people. For my money, I would say that I consider Wozniak to be a more successful human being.
More grounded, too.
Absolutely. He's a happy guy. He's very optimistic.
But maybe you needed that personality of a Steve Jobs to push Apple and to get it to where it was. He was a perfectionist.
Yeah.
He was obsessed with doing the right thing. He was a risk taker. Maybe you have to have those traits to really develop something big. But then we come back again, though, to that definition of success. I think most people would rather have a nice, comfortable job than to be dead of cancer.
I agree, and I also think that if you focus exclusively on achievement, you end up being the candle that burns at least twice as fast, and you can make sacrifices that you can't recover from. If you're 100% focused on achievement, if you're 100% focused on, say, appreciating what you have, you end up being unmotivated to improve or change anything. So I think it's a balance, and that's actually another pattern that came up in these interviews with 134 or whatever the number is, world-class performers, is that many of them, to develop that harmony or balance, have a gratitude practice, whether it's first thing in the morning or at the very end of the day. And they have different tools for this, but one is just making a list of three things they're grateful for. One has to be very simple, like the coffee they have or the mug or a bird outside the window. And then the next could be a family member. I recommend that people also list someone who helped them when they were younger, just so the list doesn't get repetitive. But I would certainly say that this is maybe a non sequitur, but if you look at many of the people who are now icons of philanthropy and so on, like Bill Gates or others, I mean, they started off, now they're like the aw shucks grandpa saving the world, but they started off as just cold-blooded killers. I mean, let's not kid ourselves with a lot of these guys. Steve Jobs certainly would fall in that category.
Well, business killers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, they're not talking about people. Ted Bundy, the category. We're talking about the sort of capitalist
crushing careers, everything else.
Oh yeah,
nothing got in their way.
Right. And I think a lot of people who pursue that path and try to emulate that without having the full picture end up incinerating themselves. And I've seen that in Silicon Valley, New York, over and over and over again. Having worked with now close to 100 different fast-growing startups, I can say that firsthand.
There are many people that others would deem successful, that we come back to the word happiness. They're not happy people.
No. And I in fact, I have met people who are on the magazine covers and so on, who walk around with drafts of their divorce papers ready to sign if they decide they want to get a divorce that day. I mean, they're on such shaky ground with their families and in their personal lives that financially they appear to be the epitome of success, whereas everything else is in shambles. So it's very important to evaluate your models holistically. And that's part of the reason that whenever I interview people, I'm always, it's not just about the balance sheet or the income statement or the shareholder returns or whatever it might be. It's also going to include personal facets so that my listeners or my readers can properly evaluate who they want to try to imitate or to model in some respect.
Does luck play a part, or do they create the luck?
I think it's both. Anyone who says there's no luck involved, if they're being honest, is either lying or delusional. I think that timing is always a component. It has to be. And
maybe fate steps in, though, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite possible. I do think that over time, though, for instance, I noticed the pattern that many of these people choose their projects not based on an attachment to an outcome, but based on the skills and relationships that they'll develop even if a project fails. And that approach over time tends to produce big successes because they might fail 8 out of 10 times, but the 2 times they do succeed towards, say, the tail end, they will have learned so much and developed such a network that they can really make it count when it matters. And that applies in many different realms, right? That applies in the creative worlds, it applies in investing, it applies in so many different...
Well, it's everywhere. Tim, stay with us. We're going to come back and talk more with you about Tribe of Mentors in our final hour. Plus, we're going to open up the phone lines, questions, and even life stories. Share them with us.